listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Top of the morning to you. Final hour of Miller and Moulton in Lake City, Tampa, St. Pete, Port Charlotte, and Venice. Thanks so much for being with us. Halfway home for those in the 239 for Miller and Moulton here on the Florida Sports Network. Pat Kerwin, kind enough to join us once again. He of NFL Radio, moving the chains weekday afternoons. Pat's weekly appearance is brought to you by Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, dozen locations in between. Went there on Mother's Day, in fact. It was beautiful. Downtown Fort Myers on the river. Pinchers, because you can't fake fresh. Pat, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, fellas, and calming down, I suppose, and just getting ready for the off-season projects that we do. And Jimmy let me know that we're going to start breaking down every team by position. It'll take from now to July 1st to do it all, but it's really worthwhile. It does set up camp that you kind of know every position group and kind of feel good about the good ones, and you know which ones to be looking at when you get to the camp tour.
All right. I'm just curious. You know, I listened to a lot of these shows last year. I found them great. Very informative listen. Did you guys go back and grade yourself at the end of the year, though? Because you guys had your, you know, ideas of who was the best at everything come July. How accurate were you at the end of the day?
As long as they don't have a lot of injuries, I mean, it's not that hard to figure out the top five offensive lines and the bottom five. In the middle, you can get cloudy, and you're projecting can rookies that are going to start play. So sometimes you're wrong, but that's the business. As Dick Steinberg told me when I was being trained, if we're 50% right, we're going to have jobs for a long time.
Pat, do you like what the NFL's doing with the schedule release and moving it all around and that sort of deal?
A couple of things I don't like, or I got to be sympathetic to other parts of the country. The Thursday night deal, that doubleheader, the second weekend. Well, one in California, one game starts at 4:15, the second game starts at 5:30, and there aren't any West Coast teams, no NFC West, no AFC West. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's being me, a little being picky, but this is their new idea that you don't have to wait for one game to end to start the other one. But I don't know. You tell me, Mark, if you're in California, 4:15 and 5:30, and no West teams either conference.
Yeah, I don't know how much they'll be watching. They've announced 9 games so far. Chargers and Chiefs, the first Thursday night game. The Twin Bill on Monday night that Pat mentioned. Titans, Bills, Vikings, Eagles, all of the international games. And they just announced the Christmas Day 4:30 slot, which will be Broncos at the Rams.
And, Pat, that'll be your game on CBS. So you guys
thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know your network's been lobbying for the last 2 years to get one of these suckers. So I think the big three networks are all getting a Christmas Day game: Fox, CBS, and NBC. My guess on Christmas Sunday, you're getting the 4:30 game, Denver at LA.
My wife is not listening this morning, so it's still a secret that I won't be there for Christmas. So. Let's leave it that way. No, I'm fine with it. It's football, and, you know, I get it. We're in the entertainment business. I haven't really had a holiday. You think about, you're a CBS guy. I am for a long time now. Thanksgiving, that's always out. So we'll just add Christmas to the list.
That weekend, because Christmas is on a Sunday, they're going to play 11 games on Christmas Eve. I think the way they're going to do it is they're going to have a Thursday game, 11 on Saturday on Christmas Eve, the 3 games on Sunday, and then the 1 Monday night football game. I believe that's how they're going to do that week.
I get it. You know, Christmas isn't for everybody, but I have a problem with Christmas Day working, but I'll be working, and that'll be that, and so will everybody else in the studio. And that's it. And try to handle Christmas when I get back down to Florida on Monday morning.
I have had fun with David this week and last because we usually have a national show on in the background, and it seems that when the show starts, they can't wait to get to the subject, and I joke around with David before every segment going, why don't we just break down what's going to happen to Baker Mayfield? But I will ask you, because we have you on, and when we have you on, how long is this going to last? And, you know, last week I was going to ask you and didn't, Pat, but with the suspension to Hopkins, and I know it's completely different to whatever suspension Deshaun Watson's going to get, but with the potential of 8 games out there, how likely is it that the Browns just keep Baker and play him for those 8 games or 10 games or whatever the suspension is?
Well, the first answer is, if it was me, that's what we'd be doing. We'd hold on to him, make sure that the other guy is cleared to go. And if not, he'd be playing, and he wouldn't have much choice. He's under contract, and he'd be told he'd start losing money by the minute. But we're not up to that part of it, and I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to move him sooner or later and risk what it could be like if Watson doesn't play and he's gone. They haven't really, no one's leaked to me that they're willing to pay a significant piece of that contract, so I don't know where it stands. They're not going to cut him. I think sooner or later they're going to realize that for 18-8, we might as well pay half of it, which I've said on the show many times, but it's not up to that. But the other part is, if you don't want him around, just cross your fingers and hope someone's starter goes down, and that changes the tune. The first question I'd ask is he better than some of the starters in this league? And I could make a case that he's better than Tua, he's better than Mills in Houston, he's better than Sam Darnold, and he might be better than Hurts as well. So there's got to be a couple teams that are looking at him going, hey, you know what, he'd be an upgrade for us. And certainly as soon as the starter goes down, that debate will turn into call him, call Cleveland. And then there's a Garoppolo factor in that whole thing, too. I mean, it's kind of all tied together when it comes down to you need a quarterback. What are you going to do here?
You know, I wonder. I still believe Baker's going to end up being a backup somewhere, and it's with a team that none of us have mentioned. And when I say us, I mean the national media. I think we've mentioned one of the possibilities on this show because we have been thinking about Baker as a backup quarterback for a while now. But I think the national media is largely still thinking of Baker as a starting quarterback. I don't think anybody's bringing in their starter in May, June, or July. I could be wrong. Pat, what do you think about this running back room? Sony Michel, Raheem Mostert, Chase Edmonds, and Miles Gaskin, because the Dolphins, that's their running back room. They took a position where they had no depth and at the very least have depth. But how much quality do you think they have?
I think in the world of attrition at running back where people run out of backs, they should be able to keep putting a player on the field that can play. And so sometimes that, if you get that achievement, Chase Edmonds can play, Sony can play, and he can be a third down guy. Mostert can play. Then the question becomes how many you're keeping. They're probably, well, they might keep the white kid, the kid, a college free agent. I don't know. Gaskins could be the man on the outside when it's all said and done at the end of camp. But I think most teams, if you ask them, there are not a lot of bell cow backs anyway, but a lot of them don't even want a bell cow back. They want a group, and they want to survive injuries, and they want to build specialty packages for everybody, which I can tell you when I was on the defensive staff, we loved playing teams that specialized backs by situations or by personnel groups. It made it easier to diagnose them and get a defensive game plan together. So unless you have these guys all doing the same thing, the defenses will start breaking it down. And you're a Giants fan, so you remember very well, David, when Tiki Barber and Ron Dane were together, everybody knew exactly what the plays were by which back was in the game, and it made it easy to defend them.
Speaking of the Giants, they dumped Bradbury. Just how many teams are out there like the Giants where there's still cap problems and you still need to be, as you try to pay attention to all 32 rosters, how many rosters should we be paying attention to for cuts like this that are still going to come?
There's a couple more. I think they're, you know, not yet, but they're going to get through all these OTAs. I mean, those were every night meetings. When we had rookie mini camp and OTAs and that stuff, we met every night. And sometimes we met the first 2 weeks of camp literally every night. And, well, why were we doing that? Because we're going to practice again the next day. We just were keeping a tab on who we're going to release. And because you don't want to get them hurt and then get stuck with a salary. So, you know, I think the cuts, Mark, will happen for a while. And the flow of them, the more excited they get about rookies that can play this year, the more likely they're going to dump some veterans. So I do think you'll see more of it. This guy, though, Bradbury, to me, we had a little poll yesterday, you know, call in and nominate why he should be signed by your team. And we had a lot of Eagle callers. We had Buffalo callers. We had a single Raider caller. We had a Cincinnati caller. You know, swap out Eli Apple right now. And when you say, well, you know you drafted one. I go, yeah, okay, great. Get him ready. But Bradbury's a good player. And even Cleveland, if you look at the way they're penciled in for starters, I think those are the teams that fans that I agreed with when they make their case that Bradbury was a complete upgrade for them. So he should get paid. Jimmy didn't like what I said about that. I said, look, have you noticed? I think there's 20 corners making $10 million or more. 20. So he's going to get $10 million a year, or he should. He'll fight for that, and he might have to wait a while to get it. But he's a good player, $10 million a year. You think, why? First thing, I would have redone his deal and kept him because they are not replacing talent for talent with him gone.
I agree with you, but this GM seems to, once again, getting rid of all the old and not keeping much of the new. Pat, 15 seconds. How much money do you need, once the season starts, how much money do you need to do business for injured players the rest of the year? $5 million, $6 million, $10 million, how much do you need?
Well, I think $5 million should be the minimum. And because you got a lot of issues here. You got a 10-man practice squad, but most importantly, you got to deal with injured reserve. Guys, and sometimes I don't know the listeners understand this, when a guy goes on injured reserve, unless he had a split contract, and no good veteran has a split contract, they're going to take full pay, and they're going to count in the cap, and you need money to go out and get a guy to replace him. Think about guys like Melvin Ingram signing in the middle of the year. So five is the minimum, but a lot of guys, it's kind of like all of our savings accounts. We'd like more in there, but we don't have more in there.
Pat Kerwin, joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers, from Tampa to Key West and many points in between. Pinchers, because you can't fake fresh.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour, Miller and Moulton, Florida Sports Network. Thanks so much for being with us. David Dwork, who covers the Panthers. Huge win last night for them in overtime to even their series with Washington at 2. Huge game for the Lightning. North of the border in Toronto, tied at 2 with the Leafs. 6 of the 8 NHL series are 2-2. 3 of the 4 NBA semifinals are 2-2. I mean, Boston, Milwaukee got tied at 2 last night, and you got Sixers Heat tonight, Mavs Suns tonight. Both those series are 2-2. Playoffs are delivering, baby.
No, and I want the Heat to win this series. I'd like to win them. I'd like them to win in 7 and have to win game 6 and 7 to do so. Because down 3-2, I can't imagine what Felipe will be like tomorrow.
Oh, that is so true.
I'm not rooting against the Heat. I don't want anybody that I'm rooting against the Heat.
No, but you want them to just do it the hard
right,
way.
Much. I'd like the Lightning to do the same thing. I would love to see Toronto win tonight and then just have their guts ripped out by the Lightning in game 6 and
well,
7.
That's because you don't like the Leafs, though. I mean, you've always had a thing against the Leafs.
Okay, and?
I'm just pointing out that those need to know your bias. You've got a Leafs thing.
See, if Miami loses tonight, I don't know what I would be more hyped for, a win in game 6 in Philly or a game 7 win.
So you still would keep the faith. You still are going to come in here going, oh, we're going to win this.
Wearing your Jimmy Butler outfit and trying to post me up at 5:42 in the morning.
Because
yeah.
We think
Bull.
We think you'll damn near be in the fetal position if they lose tonight.
Must win game.
There we go.
Exactly. We don't think you'll handle it well at all.
The NCAA's trying for a must win.
Nice transition.
It was.
Yeah, continue.
Well, they're trying for a must win. They got everybody together, you know, to they're going to figure out how to stop this NIL payments and the boosters. They've got it figured out.
You do know the train left the station on July 1st of last year.
Bingo.
They met in Arizona yesterday on May 9th.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And they think they're going to back this train up, to which Russell Smith, who operates Encore Athlete Marketing, they represent 80 college athletes, when he found out about these meetings and trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, he said, I think it's adorable that the NCAA is acting as if they're going to crack down on anything. That's one.
Wait, he went adorable?
Adorable. Mike Caspino, which represents several football players that have landed big deals with specific school booster collectives. They're saying there's a whole class of people who can't participate in the market for NIL rights. That'd be like saying red-haired people can't buy meat. That's antitrust.
Well, there's no doubt about it. This is a total loser in court. Here's the problem, though. The NCAA can make life difficult for a few years between now and then. I mean, they can. I mean, they are technically the law of the land. If they want to start enforcing it, I mean, for a couple of years, there'll be a major nuisance and inconvenience. It'll be like prohibition. And they're coming in going, are you serious? Are you really shutting us down? Come on. We all know where this is going to end. Don't know what to tell you. Just following the rules. And they dismantle the bar. And the bar will reopen in 2 years. And the bar will never be closed again. But if the NCAA, I mean, it is cute. It's adorable. As Darren Heitner, who we've had on the show many times, said yesterday, you know, they had 10 years to work on
10
this.
10 years.
I mean, they could have come up with something in which they could have avoided where they're at and now where it is they want to take it. Because you're right. This goes to the Supreme Court, by the way, this one also. This will go all the way to the top and they'll lose.
Again.
Big. Remember, they lost the last one 9-0.
Do you know how hard it is in 2022 to lose a Supreme Court case 9-0?
Well, I'm told the court has gotten political these days.
So I hear.
So 9-0 would seem to be very hard.
Phil Mickelson's got a better chance of getting back on the PGA Tour.
Mickelson has a better chance of getting in the booth and replacing Faldo than the NCAA has of winning this at the end of the day. But between now and that end of the day, they could make life just an absolute mess.
I don't think they have the infrastructure to do it. They can pass whatever laws they want. How are they enforcing them will be next to impossible.
This will be the scene in the movie in which the mob is standing there looking at the deputies going, Johnny, do you know what you're doing? And Johnny goes, I'm just following orders. And the mob guy's looking at him. You do know at the end of the day, I'm going to kill your boss. All right. And you're going to come back in here and you're going to be apologizing to me. And I'm never going to talk to you again.
Every once in a while, Elliot Ness wins. But not that often. Not when you got these cards stacked against you.
Well, at least Elliot Ness was fighting it tooth and nail, inch by inch, every step of the way. These guys took a decade off. Got destroyed in court. Got laughed at and mocked by Congress. Congress mocking another entity and people saying Congress was right. Who does Congress get to mock today? No, we mock
Mark
Congress.
Emmert.
But you can mock the NCAA. Right. But listen, they got 7 investigators. If they all show up at the same place at the same time, they really can make life miserable.
Hell, if they show up at 7 different places at once, it could make life interesting for some.
And let's be honest, for all the Canes fans listening, if the NCAA takes their 7 investigators, they're going to send them to one school in the country. Which school do you think it's going to be?
Miami.
Damn right it is.
The U.
because if you're a Canes fan, you are convinced, and you have good reason, by the way, that the NCAA has issues with you. And meanwhile, you got John Ruiz here and his bank account.
But Ruiz, who's quoted in all these articles, like saying, hey, I'm going through compliance for every deal we're doing. Every single time I sign a player, I'm making sure we're doing it the right way.
Task Force of National Collegiate Leaders with student athlete opportunity at the forefront of the discussions, specifically.
Opportunity, my ass. They want to squash every opportunity these players have.
They just don't want these inducements being used to lure recruits. They just want the fine line to be, hey, just let the man or woman choose the school they want on its own merits. And then once they're there, let's just see how much money they can get when they go to the bookstore.
So let me ask you two something. Do you think that the NCAA really wanted to pass this NIL deal, or do you think
no,
they were pressured into doing it?
They didn't want to pass any of it. They never. That's why they kicked the can down the road for 10 years. That's why it went to the Supreme Court and they lost. They had 10 plus years to figure this out. They never thought, in their arrogance / stupidity, never thought that the courts would all rule against them.
It was just 2 months ago in which they begged Congress to step in and please do something. This is just a bunch of ADs that are angry and scared, and they're like, listen, I know we haven't done anything, but we need to do something.
And I don't know if it was the arrogance of the athletic directors in combination with the arrogance of the university presidents. Because university presidents, if they had their way, would eliminate scholarships and we'd be back to playing everything like Harvard plays it. They'd do that tomorrow if they could. The majority of them.
This is the NCAA is one of the most incompetent entities in sports. The Sacramento Kings look at the NCAA and go, you guys have your head up here.
Yeah. Because the NCAA was told at every outstretch that they were going to lose and defiantly said, no, we can win. We can figure this out. We can win. We'll talk Florida Panthers with David Dwork next, Miller and Moulton.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes before the hour, Miller and Moulton, Florida Sports Network. Florida Sports Network. I was concerned about David Dwork about 9:45, 10 o'clock last night. Panthers down 2-1, under 3 minutes to go. Goalie pulled. Florida pulls victory from the jaws of defeat. One late, one early in OT. Series tied at 2. David Dwork covers the Panthers, Channel 10 in Miami. Host of the Chirpin' the Cats podcast. Follow David on Twitter at David Dwork, DWORK. You slept a lot better than you thought you were going to. Admit it.
Yes. Definitely slept a lot better than anticipated at about 10 o'clock last night. Other than having to wake up early to talk to you guys. But no, but that's the Cats' MO all season, right? Coming back and, you know, fun wins, you know, whatever you want to call it. So it was nice to see the comeback Cats are still alive and kicking playoffs.
Are you worried at all about their offense? While they've dominated in games and in puck possession and all the things that make them the talky team they've been all year, tougher scoring in the postseason, and the Florida Panthers have found that, albeit tied 2-2 in the series, scoring is way down.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like the only series of all the 8 series going on right now where scoring is down. I think in the other ones, like, there's been 4 or more goals scored by the majority of the teams in the It's kind of funny how that works. And I think that's a credit to the Washington Capitals, a veteran team that's skating their butts off, that's limiting the Panthers' opportunities. And you've seen how it slowed the Panthers up through the first 3 games. They had, you know, a good period and a half maybe in game 2. They had a really good third period. Game 3, they really struggled. And then finally last night, it was a game where you saw them start to maybe play their own game, start to possess the puck in the offensive zone a little bit more and control the pace of play. I really thought that they controlled play for the majority of the game, especially 5-on-5. You know, power play is obviously still a struggle. It showed some signs of life last night, but they're still over 13, I believe it is at this point, which is kind of ridiculous. But all in all, I mean, with the struggles they've had, you know, against the Capitals at even strength before last night, with the struggles that their power play has had, they're still tied 2-2 going into a best of three with games at home. So I think if you're not ahead of the series, they'd probably take it.
David, people like me sometimes make these big pronouncements and they come back to haunt you for years. But I really thought when Andrew Brunette made the decision to pull the goalie down 2-1 with over 3 minutes left in the game, that it was the type of decision that not only the season was going to rest on, but potentially his future as head coach of the Panthers. And by 3 inches, a puck misses going in the net, and it ends up being icing seconds after making that decision. And then a minute later, the game's tied, and we all know what happened. And Andrew Brunette turns out to be a gutsy genius. But David, admit it, when he made that call with 3:09 to go, down 2-1, everything rested on that decision.
Yeah, it was a game-changing decision. Unfortunately, it worked out for the Panthers. As you said, they came just a couple of inches away from Washington getting the empty net goal right after they pulled Bob, which would have obviously ended the game, seemingly. And look, the last game, the same thing happened to Bruno. It may have also happened in game one. He's done it in the regular season where he's pulled the goalie early. I think the last time he did it before last night, Washington scored like within seconds of the faceoff down in their own end. So it's really, you know, live or die by the blade, but it's something that Bruno's been pretty consistent about in terms of pulling the goalie maybe a little bit earlier than traditionally nowadays. I was thinking about it last night, like when I was growing up in the 90s, pulling the goalie with a minute, more than a minute to go, seemed like risque, and it slowly picked up time and got deeper and deeper as we got on, and now here we are, 3 minutes left, 4 minutes left, you're seeing some coaches pull their goalie. It could end up being, as you said, like a career-making decision. If the Panthers end up going on, or, you know, continuing on this run, and you know he ends up losing the interim tag and all that, you could look back at that moment and say, "Man, you know, if that puck is just 2 inches to the right and doesn't skim off the side of the post, maybe he's unemployed right now instead of with potentially a new 2-3 year contract if it works out that way." So it's funny how something so small can make such a big difference. But credit to Bruno. He's been adamant about this all season that, pulling the goalie a little earlier is more beneficial. And it's worked out a few times. And, last night it worked out in the biggest stage.
And then, I mean, to me, for an interim coach to get in there and have the veteran savvy to go right after a high hit by TJ Oshie on Bennett, he's already lobbying game five with game four barely out of the rearview mirror.
Yeah, we actually just got off of Zoom with Bruno right as I was starting the interview with you this morning. And I asked him, again, we talked to him about it last night, but I asked him again this morning, look, did the referees give you any kind of explanation after that? And he said, no. He said, you don't usually get that. And I asked him if he thought the hit kind of energized the team, despite the fact that it gave up a goal. It seemed that after that play, that sequence of events where Bennett got hit and Kuznetsov went down and scored, that the Panthers really turned it up a notch after that. They applied more pressure. They tied the game. They won in overtime within, 5 minutes or whatever it was. So he said something like that with a player like that, particularly pointing out Sam Bennett, because if you watch the hit, as brutal as it looks, I mean, he takes it right in the middle of his face. He pops up like a spring right off the ice and he's off, which may have also impacted why the refs left their arm down. Maybe if Bennett stays on the ice with, cradling his face in his hands, maybe a penalty does get called. But the fact that he's such a gamer and then he popped right back up and started flying down the ice trying to play defense, it just shows what kind of a player Sam Bennett is. And Bruno said that's a big factor in energizing the rest of the team and maybe contributed to them making that big final push.
David Dwork, Channel 10 in Miami, host of Chirping the Cats. It's a Florida Panthers podcast. You can follow David on Twitter at David Dwork, D-W-O-R-K. I also thought, he was not afraid to mix up the lines, move the starting lineup, if you will, the lines. Things looked very different to me last night. I thought it was just a very bold coaching night by Andrew Brunette, and I thought the team responded because, like you, even when it was tied and they were losing, I thought they had the benefit of the play for most of the night.
Yeah, it was frustrating, just kind of my thought process towards the end, because I'm thinking, man, the Panthers are playing their best game of the series. You know, it seems that the Tigers are starting to turn their favor, and yet the way that the game was playing out, you had Washington, Soli, Elias, and Sona playing quite well, Florida, you know, struggling to get past them, even though they're controlling the pace of play, and you're just thinking, man, one bad bounce could end up having the Panthers lose this game, and it turns out that, fortunately, it didn't happen. But, yeah, credit to Bruno. I mean, this is a position where, you know, his job is potentially on the line, and he switched up three of the four forward lines. He switched up all three defensive pairings. And fortunately for him, it worked out because, you know, that, there's sides to that point as well. And he could end up getting changes in the team, you know, at the close of his face. But, I mean, you know, putting Marchman on the top line, you know, moving all the defensive pairings around, Ekblad and Sherratt were together. They put Forsling and Mackenzie Weider back together. And Mackenzie Weider just had been having a pretty series at that point and his best game of the series so far. So credit to Bruno for, you know, having his finger on the pulse of the team, knowing what push, and, you know, it worked out, obviously. So now we're coming home with the series tied.
You know, pressure on everyone, but Bobrovsky's got the most, obviously. He's the goaltender, and the way they're dominating, these are hard games to goaltend. When you're out shooting someone basically at a 2-1 margin, it's difficult on the goaltender. It puts extra pressure on him. Last night, good enough, but he's going to have to continue to play better in my estimation. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you would have told me coming into the series that the Panthers were going to, you know, the series was going to be tied and they were going to be down 2-1, I would have expected that Sergei Bobrovsky had something to do with that on, you know, the negative side. But he's potentially, I mean, you could say he's been their best player through four games. He's been really consistent. You know, a lot of the goals that he's given up haven't necessarily been his fault, which isn't something that you've been able to say, not just during the season, but during his tenure in South Florida. You know, the leaky, you know, iffy goals have been kind of his MO to this point, but he's been rock solid in the playoffs. He's been absolutely the goaltender that they paid for when they signed him to that big 7-year, $70 million contract three seasons ago. And, I mean, yeah, obviously he's going to have to continue on this pace if he's going to carry this team throughout. But I think it's a great sign. I don't think the workload is bothering him at all. Sergei Bobrovsky is a guy, he wants to play 82 games. He wants to play every practice. He doesn't want a day off. This guy loves the ice. He's a rink rat. And I think this is kind of the time of year that he's built for. Hopefully his play can match his desire, but so far it has. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the X factor for the Panthers. Because if Sergei Bobrovsky had been struggling in the series, the Panthers, you know, they could be out of it at this point as well as he's played.
From what you were just told on the Zoom call, any injuries going to keep anybody out of Game 5, or are we expecting basically the same guys?
It doesn't sound like it. Bruno wouldn't come right out and say for sure that everybody will be suiting up. He said there's a couple of guys that might need to get looked at, but it sounds very minor. He said Sam Bennett needed some stitches after the game last night, but he should be okay. So, you know, obviously hedging his bets, not wanting to give anything away too early, but it certainly doesn't sound like anybody's any worse for the wear. And I would expect, I'd be surprised if they didn't put out the same lineup with the same lines and pairings ahead of Game 5 just based on how well they played last night.
David, thanks for your time once again. We felt a little guilty until we realized that the Panthers had a Zoom call before this interview appearance. So, you know, only limited guilt on this end. But thanks so much for being available to us, and best of luck to you and the Panthers going forward.
Happy to do it, fellas. Have a great day.
David Dwork covers the Panthers, Channel 10 in Miami, hosts Chirping the Cats, a Florida Panthers podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at David Dwork, DWORK. They had three consecutive power plays in a 7-minute stretch last night. Didn't score in any of them. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, they are going to lose. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. They gutted one out. They got it. They got two bounces late. Guy misses the empty net from three quarters ice by 2 inches. And then the goal they got, they got a fluky bounce off a Caps forward, ends up right on the stick in the slot, buries it, and they go to overtime. Really good goal in the OT.
Great OT goal. They got the tire. Hey, look, as David said, they may have played their best game in the series last night and got out with a one-goal victory.
And they were fortunate to.
That would scare the you-know-what out of me, is you play your best game and you got to win in overtime.
The other way to look at it, though, is they've yet to score a power play goal, and they're 2-2. you got to figure at some point they're going to put one or two of those on the back of the net.
Because the other team is.
Yeah.
The Caps power play has been enough to get them a goal nearly every game.
Game five tomorrow night for the Panthers. Couple of game fives tonight. Lightning in Toronto, Heat at home for the Sixers. We're going to see Duncan Robinson tonight for the Heat. I mean, the Heat shot barely over 20% from three.
He's their leading three-point scorer on the season. Hasn't played,
what
did he play? 55 seconds in this series, something like that?
He's played 1 minute in the last three games.
I think that's all he's played in the series. Thought I read it right, that he's played 55 seconds in this series.
I think he played a little bit game one. The point is that to open up their playoff series, their first round playoff series, game one against the Hawks, he scored 27 points off the bench and had seven threes.
And they've decided to put in what's-his-face there to start.
Struce.
And Robinson's not part of the rotation at all.
And Robinson was the starter for like 2 years.
Well,
and then they paid him.
You got to figure, though. You lose two in a row and you're coming home. If Spo's going to make any changes, like we just talked hockey there, and you could not know anything about the Florida Panthers, but think about what David Dvorak said. He mixed up three of the four lines in all three defensive pairings. That's radical changes from one game to another in a playoff series. I mean, that's the guys in the room looking up at that chalkboard mark and saying to themselves, well, blank, the coach is all in. I mean, if they didn't win last night, for everything that that coach did, I think they would have been cooked.
I agree with you 100%. And I don't know if the Heat are cooked if they lose tonight, because I think they can easily win two in a row in this. But it would be nice to see after what Philly's done as a little counter by Spo tonight.
It's got to be something internal within the locker room. I don't know what, because he spaces the floor. He's a spot-up shooter.
Well, and also, he's their best three-point shooter, and everybody else he's playing are not hitting their threes. So even if you don't want to play him, when the guys you're playing are not hitting the threes, at some point you would think he would go, well, I got to throw Duncan in there because we got to make a couple of these.
He's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA.
Right. That's why it's very noticeable. It's been real easy. The team that made shots, as stupid as it sounds, but the teams that have made the threes have won the games in the Heat-Sixers series. The role players have all made their shots at home.
At home.
Not on the road. Does that continue?
I think it will tonight. I like the Heat in game five for what it's worth.
So you lay the three?
I'd lay the three. I am worried about the Lightning tonight.
I think all the pressures in the world's on the Leafs. I think first goal tonight. If you're a Lightning fan and you could ask just for one thing from the hockey gods, could you just give me 1-0 Lightning? Because remember, Toronto got off to the great start in game one. They have not played from behind in the series, if you think about it. Been up 1-0 and 2-1.
Miller and Moulton, the bonus hour ahead right here on the Florida Sports Network.